full of cinematic garbage. One man will be your filter. Welcome to Movies Worth Seeing with your host, Michael Piccinieri.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Movies Worth Seeing. I'm your host, Michael Piccinieri, joined by Martin Jung and Matt Vella, our guest filmmaker for today's episode.
G'day, g'day. Thanks for having me.
Yes, Matt has just, well, he's released a short film comedy. It's on YouTube right now. It's called She's Not Your Type. And Matt is going to be talking to us all about the life of an aspiring filmmaker. So, What?
We killed him. Guys, the movie is that good.
That's how funny the movie is.
I thought you were laughing at me. I was just laughing at the short film.
He's crying. Look at him. Man, this punk ass bitch crying on camera.
We're actually going to be reviewing Day Shift later. But I must say, Matt, like your short film, it's like 10 minutes and you packed in all these jokes. Like, your short film did a better job of making me laugh than this $100 million fucking Netflix movie with Jamie Foxx.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Jamie Foxx. I'm sorry, Dave Franco. I'm a big fan, but yeah, thank you.
It was phenomenal. It was great, man. I got to ask, like, what inspired you to make this short film?
Great question. The one I did before that was an action film, and I wanted to do something completely different. Because I was struggling trying to write action. It's always like, he's an ex-cop. He's an ex-military guy. It's hard to be original in the action genre, I find.
Yeah.
It's all been done before sort of thing.
Just like Day Shift.
And I just had this idea for a comedy one day. I hadn't really done comedy properly before. And I'm like, fuck it. I'm just going to write it. I'm going to go for it. And turns out the idea is pretty good because a lot of people are really enjoying it. I've always been a fan of scumbag characters. And I was just like, what would it be like if you were to date that scumbag? You know, Usually those roles are played like dudes. And I thought, if that was like my girlfriend, I'd be fucking shitting myself, right? And I've often been like a third wheel in the past. And then everything just fell together. I literally just started writing dot points like, this would be a pretty scummy thing to do. And then before I knew it, I had a script. It basically wrote itself. It was amazing.
That's so good, man. And it's so relatable too. Like dating. We've all, I don't know.
He's still laughing.
that's something you can relate to is like, we've all dated that person that we're like, God damn, I really wish I didn't date that person. Like, what was I thinking? What drugs was I on? And
thing is though, you're like that afterwards, but at the time you're often so love blind, sometimes you don't notice it, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I really want to dig into.
Yeah, you're either blinded by love or sex.
Yeah, unfortunately. That's how it is.
What was the biggest challenge making a short film like this?
There's a few. I don't know what the biggest would be. I think honestly, the biggest was just having confidence and trusting myself, you know? It was hard to know what something is funny or not. So we often shot multiple jokes within the same scene. And then in the editing, it was just choosing and trying to figure out which was the funniest part, you know?
Yeah.
But there were other things too. I had trouble getting some cast members on board. I wanted to have my cousin's kid play the kid. And they said no. Yeah. They didn't want their kid having such a foul mouth. And
the kid was brilliant, by the way. Caught me off guard.
I had another actor whose agent told them not to do it. And They came back and said, you know what? Stuff it. I'm going to do it anyway. It's my call. Because they liked the script. I'm like, thank you.
Yeah. See, it wasn't woke enough. He's like, I don't know about this.
To be fair, it's like some people are like, my mom hates this movie. She says, Matt, it's got too much swearing. I'm like, that's why it's good, Mom. That's why. And so when the right people see this film, they fall in love with it. They tell me it's one of the best comedic short films they've seen. Some film festivals, they tell me amazing positive reaction. And then I get some people saying that it's the worst thing they've ever seen. And for me, that's a sign that I've done a good job.
This sounds like the Thor Ragnarok of short films. It's polarizing people. People either hate it or they love it.
I'm going to take that. I'm going to put that on a poster, okay?
How good
is that? The Thor Ragnarok of short films. Thank you. That's such an honor.
Well, even Love and Thunder was the same. Like, people would just like, oh, I loved it. And other people like, I hated it. And you're kind of like, how can something be so hated and so loved? It's weird how that can happen with us, with humans, that we can be so subjective.
Mm.
And it must be so hard for you when you're like showing the video, especially maybe before you released it, to work out like, oh, is this good or is it not? When like some people are telling you, I loved it. And yeah. And then other people are like, dude, no.
There's no in between. It's just either ends of the spectrum.
Comedy is just, honestly, it's fucked because there's no right or wrong answer. It's not like a math question where it's like, this is the answer. There's no way to know. The only way to know is by trialing it. So like, you would know as someone who's done stand-up, right?
Well,
like,
you've done stand-up too.
Yeah. What I wish I did stand-up before making this movie, because what I've learned from stand-up is like, you can just try the jokes, different crowds, and then you start realizing, oh, this one gets more laughs. You have no idea why that one gets more laughs than the other one, but for some reason, you know it gets more laughs.
Oh,
and so you keep it. And that's how you build your set. And filmmaking is kind of the opposite, because what I've found is when you start going to film festivals, you can watch the audience reaction.
Mm.
And some jokes you think will be amazing and they don't do so well. And then some, like, there's one joke in this film I thought was just okay. And it gets a good laugh every time. Like, oh, well, apparently it's a good joke.
Yeah.
You can't really know.
And some bits you didn't intend to be funny that it gets like the best reactions out of. And it's like, you don't see that in the editing stage.
Dude, that is the biggest mind fuck in stand-up, when you're writing all these jokes that you think are amazing and you write this shitty, like, you know, dad joke or whatever, and then you perform and the dad joke is the only thing that fucking lands, and you're like, are you guys for real? That's what yous want?
Yeah.
And even like some lines that's not a joke at all, it's just the interim, it's just the bit, it's just the the line in between the jokes, and then for some reason they have a big reaction to that.
That's the good thing about comedy, because then we can go, did that on purpose. Can't get over that in like a horror film or a drama, you know. Sometimes.
Yeah. Like the audience says, how did you come up with that? And then you give this long-winded, hour-long explanation of like, well, I wanted the symbolism to get across how we're deconstructing Hollywood. Sorry, I'm still fresh off my Nope review. So do you have anything else coming up?
Right now, I'm focusing just a little bit more on my YouTube channel, trying to get some sketches done and just trying to experiment in comedy in much shorter form. It means there's a lot less like pressure on me to get everything perfect all the time, which is great. So hopefully at Velomat Films on YouTube, have a lot more regular content coming out. So yeah, and then later on down the track, we're gonna have some more short films and hopefully feature one day. That's the dream.
Have you got any advice like doing these short films? Any advice for aspiring filmmakers?
There's a lot I guess you could give. I hate to say it because I feel like it's such generic advice.
No. I know what you're going to say.
But it's like, just do what you want to do. Just pick up a phone.
Just
you can film.
Do it.
Yeah, everybody says that. But like, what I've learned is like, after like doing so much content and stuff, is like, one, if you try and do something you don't fully believe in, it often ends up being not your best work. And two, it's like, sometimes you're just waiting around for so long to do something, and then you just don't end up doing anything. Like this film, I made at the end of 2018 and I'm only releasing it now. Why didn't I release it ages ago? Well, there's a bunch of reasons, like the pandemic and other stuff too. And it was doing good at the film festival circuit, so I wanted to wait till after that. But I could have put this out ages ago, and that means I could have been focusing on something a lot sooner. And like, I've got unreleased projects because I wasn't happy with them or whatever, when I should have just not been a little bitch and I should just put it out there, you know?
Well, don't be too hard. So, don't beat yourself up here, man.
Yeah. But
you've
like,
released it now.
Exactly. And I'm really proud of that too. And I'm glad that I'm like talking to awesome people like yourself and promoting it. It feels really good.
Yeah.
But like a lot of filmmakers I meet, they get so paranoid of like, oh, what will people think of this? Because it's not my best work. Well, actually, it probably is your best work because it's the most recent thing you've done. And if you don't put it out, people will not realize you're a filmmaker. Because if you're a filmmaker that doesn't make films or release films, then you're just a guy who does something on the weekends, you know? So I'd say just make your films and put them out.
Yeah. Nice, man. Nice. Yeah, your short film escalates very quickly. It's like in Anchorman when Ron Burgundy's like, that escalated. It kicked up a notch. It did.
That's a good impression.
That's what it felt like watching Matt's film.
Thank you.
Like, starts off short and sweet, but like rom-com style, and then it's just boom, boom, boom. Like, it's just those extra steps. So, I've put together some quotes that I'm going to say out of context. These are quotes from Matt's short film on his YouTube channel at was it Velomat Films?
That's it, yeah.
So, you can see the film at Velomat Films on his YouTube channel. So,
here we go.
It's like the Empire State Building had a ball sack.
I like that one.
Menopause before men and balls. So it's like, you know, chicks before dicks. And it's like, menopause before men and balls.
I got to get that on a t-shirt.
Yeah. That would be a good little t-shirt. Like, if you're performing stand-up, and be like, guys, I got my menopause shirts.
Fun fact, there are 20 of those, and only 3 of them made the film.
20 of those jokes?
You know, in the film, there's... Yeah. I don't know, don't put this in if you don't want to, but it was like, so in the film, there's, I think it's chicks before dicks, then it's boobs before dudes, and menopause before men and balls.
Yes.
But out of all the others, there was, what was there, holes before poles.
Oh, that was in it.
Oh, that was, that was in it. Okay. Then there was a bunch of others, like, what was it? There was, I'm thinking some shit ones. There's bazongas before dongas. There's, flaps before, was Chaps? It flaps before lads or something? Pads before dads was one.
Wow.
There was literally like 20 of them. And the way we did is I sent the girls away because we had 3 in the script. And I said, you come up with like 10 more. And just literally anything was like randomly, tampon strings before man bun things.
Wow.
There was a lot. Good. There was a fucking lot. And eventually we'll put out an outtakes reel and you'll be able to see them all. Yeah, I'm really proud of menopause before men and balls.
The ratios of all the jokes that were made, like ratio of that to all the ones that made the final cut, so to speak. Like, that's, you're saying that it's like that big of like a difference. Oh
yeah, for all the bathroom scenes, so both the like chicks before dicks and the way that she describes the dick, there are like 100 of those. Yeah, that's another reference there. And then also the Vin Diesel joke. I won't spoil it here, but behind the scenes, there was like another 10 other Vin Diesel jokes.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I can tell like in that bathroom scene, they must have workshopped so many and there must have been so much more that didn't make the final cut. Oh, we all did.
There were jokes from the cameraman, the sound guy. Everybody was pitching in on that.
Like you can just feel that like everybody was in on it. Not just the cast, but the crew as well, which is what like surprised me learning about that. The crew was in on everything as well, you know, like even though a lot of stuff was like coming up on the day, everyone was in on it. It was like you could feel that collaborative spirit as well.
That's the thing with comedy. It's like, you know, like when you do improv or you do like crowd work with stand up, like that real energy, it comes through. And I believe it's the same with filmmaking. That's why people love like Taika Waititi films so much. It's like he throws a script out and they figure it out on the day. And that's what makes the scene, like the energy comes through the camera. You can't make that shit up.
I was going to say, you're like the opposite of Taika Waititi because you actually will edit out jokes. You won't just leave every fucking single joke in the film and where it's like 10 minutes of just actors saying the jokes over and over again. You're
There's
like,
a quota.
Is there a cut or something like... They meant to leave that in, but you say, no, like, we are going to, like, we'll workshop these jokes and work out what the best one is, and then we'll leave the best ones in.
I think it's the same.
Which is really good.
Yeah, I think it's the same sort of creative idea. It's just his approach is like death by 1,000 cuts, which sometimes is amazing, and then some people aren't as much into it. But, like, I think if you're watching a Taika Waititi film, you should know you're watching a Taika Waititi film. Like, you should expect that shit.
For better or for worse.
Yeah. But, like, when he does, like, emotional scenes, like, that guy can do emotion, too. It just, I feel like sometimes he doesn't want to do that. He's the type of guy who wants to make the joke at every second he can. And I know, that's just his style. Yeah. Sorry, we got on a tangent there.
No, it's all right. It's all good.
But basically, the point is that, like, sometimes you can, you know, you watch YouTube videos, you can just sort of, or like films where you can just tell, like, the actors, they're just there for the paycheck and stuff. They're in it just because they're contractually obligated to, whereas, like, a passion-driven film, like indie films and stuff, You can tell, like, everyone, the casting crew, they put their 110% into it. And you can't exactly put it into words, but you just, like, know on an instinctive, like, base level that, like, yeah, these guys, they enjoyed the process of it. Not they weren't just there for the product.
Thanks, man. That means a lot.
And I'll just finish up with the last quote I wanted to say out of context. Tell me I'm a man or I'm going to shit on this pizza.
We did that.
Have fun figuring out how all these jigsaw pieces fit together.
That'll be the fun part now. Or now you go and see how it fits together.
I got to say, man, it's the wildest experience seeing someone else quote your movie to, even if it's the most crazy bullshit words that you've ever heard come out of someone's mouth. So thank you so much. That's awesome.
That's all good, man. So now we're going to start our review of Day Shift, one of the latest straight to Netflix movies starring Jamie Foxx. Man, this film does feel like a straight to Netflix movie.
It does feel like it was either straight to Netflix or it was like, oh, let's put it towards cinema. And then like the testings weren't so great. It's like, hey, Netflix, we've got a movie for you.
Can you get something out of the damn dumpster for us right now? So yeah, Day Shift reminds me of like the B-grade horror films of like the 90s, or the early 2000s. Like it's got a simplistic plot and some cheesy dialogue and a generic villain to match. But let's see if you should sink your teeth into this straight to Netflix movie or if it belongs in the grave along with the vampires.
I'm an Eastern vamp. It's an urban vamp. And you're a...
Uber vamp. That's on our
I'm a spider vamp. Thank you very much.
Did they ever explain what makes them different? No.
No, they didn't. Which we will get into in depth.
Let me just say the story for you guys before we get into this. A hardworking blue-collar dad just wants to provide a good life for his quick-witted 10-year-old daughter. His mundane San Fernando Valley pool cleaning job is a front for his real source of income, hunting and killing vampires. All right. What did you guys think going into this movie?
Expectations, how do you go lower than like minus infinite? Oh god.
Damn, that's fucking jeez, I thought I was harsh about movies. Get a load of this guy.
Damn, dude.
For a pool cleaner, there's so many wasted like comedic opportunities where he uses pool cleaning instruments to like dispatch vampires and whatever.
That's a good point.
It's a 30-second scene.
Squirt chlorine into their eyes to temporarily blind them and then use the fishing net to do this and that. And then, I don't know.
Man, if that's your biggest problem with this film, I was going to say.
It does bring up a good point, though. It would have been nice to see, like, just the monotony of, like, the pool cleaning to kind of set up this dude's life, that it's how dull it is and how the vampire killing is almost like an escape for this guy. What the fuck was his name, by the way? Bud.
Bud.
I'm calling him Bud. Jamie Foxx for the whole review.
Yeah, he had a crazy last name. Here we go. Bud Jablonski.
Jablonski.
And straight away, I was like, he doesn't look like a Jablonski.
No.
That was what I thought. It was distracting.
Like, there's a scene where I think, like, a vampire, like, whispers, like, Jablonski.
Oh,
that's right. He's got, like, an Italian-sounding name. It'd
be funny if the vampire's like, wait a second, you're not a Jablonski. And he's like, ba-boom.
Yeah, it just makes me think Jamie Foxx wasn't their first choice.
That's a shame because, like, I actually really like Jamie Foxx. Like, I felt like he was well cast and the dude looks like a badass. He's 60 or something.
Is he? Really?
I'm pretty sure he's fucking old.
Jamie Foxx is one of those people that he's naturally, I think, just really good at everything he does.
Yeah.
He can sing, he can do stand-up, he can act, he can do it all. But it's one of those examples of, like, you can only work with what you've got. And I think this film is a great example of what I assume is just way too many cooks in the kitchen. Because this film is stretched in multiple directions and it doesn't really know what it's trying to be. Because when I look at this film, I assume it was originally intended to be a buddy comedy, right? You got Dave Franco, who is fucking really trying with what he's got here. I actually think Dave Franco is, like, he did not phone in his performance, I don't think. I think he really did try. Yeah. But if it's a it's a buddy cop sort of thing. We don't meet Dave Franco's character until like 20, 30 minutes into the film, right? And the whole middle section is almost those two together. And they get sort of separated towards the end. And so now you've got like this buddy cop thing, but it's only really buddy cop in like the second act. And then the whole first act, or at least the first 20 minutes, is just this really serious horror action sort of thing going on, where Jamie Foxx plays this like almost no nonsense straight man character. So if it wasn't for like the opening like Dr. Dre song, you'd probably assume it wasn't a comedy. And then on top of all that, you got this director who's his directorial debut. His background is in action, and I got to say, I think the action scenes are really well directed.
Fight choreography is fucking amazing in this.
Totally, especially the final action scene. Really good. Yeah,
there's something like I love the fight choreography, but then it starts going into Cirque du Soleil.
The weird vampire contortionist
thing. And
sometimes in the fight scenes, like that first fight scene is fucking amazing. I love that. And there's some imaginative moments where they're showing the vampire with the reflection.
But
then they keep doing the same shit over and over, the same flips, the same movements, the acrobatics coming out of nowhere. Even Snoop Dogg ends up doing all these stunts where it's super obvious there's a stunt double. And you start to be like, I'm kind of over it now. Can we see something different?
You can only break someone's spine too many times. Yeah.
I call this John Wick syndrome, where John Wick, first time we see it, incredible, amazing, one of the best action movies ever, you know? Then you watch, like, say, John Wick 3, which is probably 20 minutes longer than it shouldn't be, if not longer, where he's just constantly doing these same, like, got your gun, flipped you over, jiu-jitsu move. And it's like, we've seen this 40 times in the same movie. Maybe mix it up a little bit. I'm not saying it's bad, but it's like, it's only magic the first time, you know?
Yeah. And it doesn't look realistic, because there's times where you think to yourself, all right, this character could have killed the vampire way sooner all the flips and shit. Like, it's ruining your sense of belief. Like, you can't believe it. It doesn't look realistic, because it looks like people are trying to be flashy rather than actually having their objective of like killing each other.
That's how I feel about every time I see a modern action movie where a female heroine does the same move where her legs go over a male's head and then does some like triple backflip to spin him over. And it's like, it was cool the first time Black Widow did it, and maybe Iron Man 2. But now like that's like the only move they can do. And it's just not an effective way to attack someone. Just stab the guy. Just stab his neck.
Impractical. Yeah. Takes too long.
There's a vampire that does that in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
It's to Dave Franco's character. And I remember seeing it and being like, this vampire does not want to kill him.
Yeah.
Because he's
he could have
like,
bit him.
Just dancing with him.
For 15 minutes, Dave Franco's character is legit like, help, help. No one's coming to his aid. This vampire legit could have killed him like 10 million times.
Mm.
But instead, she's just clawing away like that. It's just like, there's a neck right there. Get your fangs into that. I know he's wearing the neck bracer thing, but still, there's all this exposed skin over here. And she's just dancing with him.
I wouldn't say, this moment didn't happen in this movie, but it happens very a lot and of these type level movies where maybe you see a scene as this big, strong guy. And he walks up to someone and he grabs them and then throws them across the room and they fly and they hit a wall and the person's like, oh, a little help. It's like, if he punched him in the head, he would have killed the guy.
Yeah.
But like the whole, it's just typical Hollywood trying to like be flashy things.
Yeah.
Look, it doesn't kill a movie like this for me, like, because I feel like a movie like this is like, it's aimed at a younger audience, most likely. It's trying to like give you all the bells and whistles to be flashy, even though it's probably on a smaller budget compared to like, you know, your Avengers or whatever. So I kind of expect that from a movie like this.
Yeah.
But I'm fucking overseeing it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, well, when you said that you feel like there's different movies happening at once, like different directions, that's what I feel. I feel like, this movie has its moments where it wants to be like a low budget, B grade kind of horror comedy, but then other moments where it goes into full, like Michael Bay car chase with drone shots and shit, and it feels really out of place tonally. And the film just doesn't have this coherent kind of look or theme throughout.
Yeah. And I would say the Like, there are moments where it just forgets it's a comedy film. Like, it's not even trying to be comedic. It's just long stretches without jokes. And then all of a sudden, Dave Franco comes up. He's like, oh, guys, oh, I'm a little wuss. And, it's like, oh, I forgot. It's meant to be a comedy. So they're awkwardly placed in. And then I will say, like, you touched on this earlier, Martin, but, like, there are little moments where it's like they try and go deeper into the lore. Like, they're like, oh, there's Uber vampires and all these other different spider vampires. And they start talking about all this, like, actual detail of this world that you don't normally see done in vampire movies. I'm like, okay, you're trying to be interesting. That's great. More of that, please. No, move on. And it's like, that's like one of the one things you had going for you, man. Like, I would have loved to see, you know, give us the vampire world and the politics of why there are different types of vampires and all this other shit. But again, it just feels like there was one producer who goes, you got this one director who goes, I want to make an action movie. But then you've got someone else who's like, it's got to be a comedy. And then you've got someone else says, well, it's a horror as well. And a horror comedy is already like a pretty niche mashup of genre as it is. And then someone's trying to put in all this extra lore. And then you've clearly got someone who's a giant Snoop Dogg fan, because Snoop Dogg, as always, is playing the unique character of Snoop Dogg.
This movie was sucking Snoop Dogg's dick.
It was. Like he gets the big minigun scene. Yeah. He gets, straight up, that end where he's like, West Side for life. It's like a real director told him to do that. God. And like, I'm not going to lie. If I was 13 again, I would have been like, dude, this is dope. But like, I'm too old to call that cool now. Like, that is cringe. That's, and I was cringe. Like, surely Snoop Dogg had to know that was cringe too, right?
Oh, he don't give a fuck.
Yeah, he just wants the money.
I mean, he can't act for shit, but he's all over this movie. And he's in a role where he's not only in the movie a fair bit, but he's like, it requires a lot of effort. Like, it requires actual acting, but he...
He's doing his typical like voice, his persona. Here's the problem with like real big name stars, right? They become a brand, and therefore when you become a brand, you have to stay to that brand. That's why Tom Cruise always acts like Tom Cruise. Will Smith always acts like Will Smith.
Slapping people.
Or, you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson always plays Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Like, these are actors that maybe they can have range, but they're not willing to show it because they have to play the one type. Snoop Dogg's the same, but the problem with Snoop Dogg is like his persona is I'm a gangster rapper, and you put him in these roles where he's not playing a gangster rapper.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of weird. Like, it was funny when you first saw it in like Starsky and Hutch or one of the animated roles. We don't expect to see Snoop Dogg playing a cute little animal, but like, we've seen 50 of these now and I'm just over it. It's like, Snoop Dogg, look, you were great in 2004. or whatever, but like, if you're gonna like be in a movie, can you like make an attempt to play a character?
Yeah, you can't just get Snoop Dogg and then be like, all right, he's a scientist or something, and he's also a badass who can do everything.
Like, his best roles is when Snoop Dogg plays Snoop Dogg, when he plays himself.
Yeah.
Because then it's like, oh, it's Snoop Dogg, and they're gonna smoke weed with Snoop Dogg. Great.
Like, why not in this movie just be like, it's Snoop Dogg playing Snoop Dogg and be like, wait a sec, what the hell, Snoop Dogg? And he's like, yeah, he's been a part of the union since the beginning. Then it's funny because we're like, oh, it's just Snoop Dogg legit just being Snoop Dogg.
You're actually right. It would have been funnier and cooler if Snoop Dogg was literally named Snoop Dogg. And it's Snoop Dogg smoking a blunt. It's Snoop Dogg shooting a minigun. It's Snoop Dogg killing vampires. It's Snoop Dogg saying West Side for life. But instead, it's some guy called... They called him like the Black Cowboy or
Big
something.
Big J or some shit.
Yeah. And he's just there. It's like, no, it's just Snoop Dogg.
Wouldn't it be funny if they got Snoop Dogg to play like actual Snoop Dogg, but Snoop Dogg's just like, I'm not a real gangster, man. and then by the end of the film, he has to learn to like actually be a gangster, and he learns by killing vampires. Wow. Like, wouldn't that be fucking interesting though?
It would be more effort than the production company on this film was willing to put in.
Yeah.
But that would have been interesting.
Like, if you told me that, I would 100% watch that movie.
Yeah. Or it would do like a unbearable weight of massive talent thing where like he plays himself in a hyper realistic scenario.
Because it's Snoop Dogg, like we use him sparingly because he can't act.
Oh, I think it's more because they can't afford him, to be honest.
What, Snoop? What do you mean?
I feel like they they had limited budget, and Snoop Dogg charges a shit ton because his name sells. And so they're like, okay, so he gets one scene in the beginning where he sort of mentors the main character, which that way we can put it in the trailer. I haven't seen the trailer for this, but I'm going to assume Snoop Dogg's all over it. And then at the end, we give him a big, awesome action scene. It's just like Dwayne Johnson, Fast and Furious 7. It's like every role Morgan Freeman plays. It's whenever they get an expensive actor to like have the character set up the storyline so he can use his dialogue in the trailer and then bring him back in the end to do something cool. And then just get him the fuck out of here because we can't afford it. It's 5 days max for the actor probably.
Yeah.
And skadoosh, you're out of here.
Yeah.
That's my theory anyways. I wasn't on set, but that's what I reckon.
I would have just been like, what are we achieving with Snoop Dogg in this role? Yeah. Like, it's probably going to be a one moment of like, oh my God, it's Snoop Dogg. And then you go back to, okay, get on with the movie. So I would have just like had him, like, as you said, in that mental kind of scene,
yeah,
and then fucked him off, like, to keep the budget low. To keep the budget low, and so we focus on the more important things, like the main character. Mm.
We say all this like Jamie Foxx isn't charging millions a day or something. Like, Jamie Foxx is a big name actor.
Yeah, that's true.
But I wouldn't be surprised. I haven't looked it up, but he's probably a producer on this. He's probably getting maybe a back end deal or something. I don't know. But Dave Franco, like, he's not bad too. Like, he's no, like, you know. Don't forget about Dave Franco. Dave Franco is a name.
When I see Dave Franco, I can't help but think, like, this is a role that James Franco just passed.
The less controversial James Franco.
Yeah,
the less
controversial.
James Franco is just like throwing scripts around like, ugh, this won't do me. And then Dave's like, give it to me.
I'll pee my pants.
It's true.
I'll make it work.
Yeah. I think though with Dave Franco, yeah, like, I think it just goes to show, like, you look at the poster. He's in the fucking background. And really, he should be, like, his type of character should be right next to Jamie Foxx. But it just goes to show how big of a star Jamie Foxx is in comparison. The marketing team are like, no, put Jamie Foxx front and center. And I wouldn't be surprised in the editing room if they cut out a lot of Dave Franco scenes to make it more Jamie Foxx focused. Again, that's a total guess.
But it felt like this movie was legit about to cut out Dave Franco at one point.
Yeah, like, it's crazy that his character is set up to be so important to, like, the integral of the plot, but, like, they're purposely trying to make him a side character when I think that type of role should be, like, a leading role. It should be like a co-lead role. It should be Dave Franco and Jamie Foxx. They are Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker, right? But this movie instead is trying to be like, you know,
you're like the loser
in the background,
and I'm the cool guy, and you just stay right
yeah.
there.
Yeah,
it's that tropey thing where it's like the one tough macho man that always is like, oh, this is why I work alone thing, and then that he has to begrudgingly take on like some like a protege.
It's exactly what it is,
and then someone that's like just so bumbling and just like cannot do anything with anything. It's like, oh, just hang that over there. Whoops,
yeah,
like that.
They that's go what out the film of the way. Is, but they're trying to not be that, and it's like, motherfucker, if you just accept what you are, you'd be so much better.
Well, I mean, if you listen to the dialogue, like, the chief guy is legit like, you want this jab, you're gonna have to take the rookie. And I'm like, fuck, I've yeah. seen this. Like, there's even a little bit that legit reminded me of McBain from The Simpsons, where
yes,
he's like,
yes.
Look, you don't do things by the book, but he does. And like, I was expecting Jamie Foxx to just be like, buy book and just shoot the fucking book with a giant revolver. I was like, The Simpsons made fun of these tropes 20, 30 years ago, and we're still doing these tropes in a movie like this. It's just mind-blowing to me. One is the geek, and the other is the hatchet, lone wolf, who only works alone. And I was like, and even the dialogue, it's just so like,
There is a lot of very wooden dialogue, I would say. And you're right. Like, that's a great example of like, you don't do things by the book. You're rah, rah. And it's like the reason those scenes are cringe is because they're literally just getting the placeholder text and leaving it there. You can do scenes like, you can do cliche scenes. Cliches are cliches for a reason because they're classics, but they become cliches when you just lazily throw in those cliche dialogue. If you mix it up, maybe throw in a joke, something we don't expect. Maybe if you find a creative way to like do a spin on it, or just have them say it in not such a boring, generic way, it could actually be not feeling as cringe.
I mean, speaking of boring and generic way, what about the way this movie sets up, like, the stakes for the main character, Bud? The movie legit is just like, all right, his ex-wife says to him, hey, Bud, we need money for our daughter's tuition fees. Oh, and she needs braces, and you need to give me the money for it by Monday. And it's like, but today's Friday. Whoa, I'm going to have to hunt vampires. And I'm like, oh, my God. Can we at least, like, try and explain why this has to be done by Monday? Like, the bullshit trope of, like, the ex-wife that's going to move away to a different state because all of a sudden now, no, can't be in California, gotta leave, and I gotta leave in 3 days because that's what people do. They move their entire lives to another state in three
the
fucking days.
Other side of the entire country. Yeah. California is here and Florida is all the way at the other, like, corner as well.
It's a very unrealistic deadline. Look, I get it. I understand why a writer would do that. It's because they want to set up drama. They want to set up stakes. They want to, a ticking time bomb is always like one of the best ways to increase drama. Good. But can you do it in a way that's not so fucking generic?
Give us a bit more detail. Like, why are you guys moving? Is there other problems in this marriage? Like, can we know a bit more about why the marriage has gotten to this point? Like, in Liar Liar, they kind of do a similar thing where, like, the ex-wife moves, she's going to leave. But that's because they had to contain all the events in that one day where he can't tell a lie. And by the time it gets to that point at the end of the film, you feel like you know why their marriage didn't work out.
Mm.
But with these guys, I don't know anything about their marriage, their relationship. And then it's like, well, we're divorced and you need to give me some money by this date because plot.
Plot. Because plot.
Because plot.
Yeah, this movie doesn't, like, stick to its own rules. It's like, and it's just like, it's just tropes. And I think just tonally, it just this film just doesn't know what it wants to be, and it just doesn't follow its own rules as well. It's like, okay, so, like, one way is, like, the way you kill vampires that we've seen often with all the fighting stuff is decapitation. But then it's like later on, Dave Franco, spoiler alert, he gets decapitated and Jamie Foxx is like, oh, damn it. But then he just comes back to life and it's just like, oh, don't go over any speed bumps. So it doesn't commit to its own lore. And the lore it tries to establish, it's like, it's sometimes it's just going back to the house scenes. Like it seems like they're trying to like make it, like make some serious points. Like when the book smart guy starts to list off like the fact that these different southern and eastern ones, they never cohabitate. It's like, oh, no, wait, the kid's got a good point. And then you know, the whole like the sunscreen thing as well, it's like it gets mentioned maybe like twice in a whole movie. So when they don't mention it, you just find that all these subplots just don't, like, it has nothing to, it's like, it doesn't have anything to do with anything, and it just, like, doesn't commit to anything itself has established as well.
Well,
you know?
You brought up a great point. I love the scene when they're in the truck, and they're both dumping exposition, like a fuck ton of exposition on all these different vampires, all this world building. And they're just like, do you know about a Uber XL vampire? I only know about the Uber Comfort vampire. Do you know about the Uber Pets vampire? Well, there's the Uber Rideshare vampire. Do you know about the spider vampire? Or do you know about the tarantula? The tarantula vampire only climbs on the top of ceilings and doesn't go to the floor. And the other vampire swings webs out of his fucking fists and this and that. And I was just like, you two guys are having a conversation that the audience does not know what the fuck yous are talking about.
Mm. Look, I think it can be interesting if you have these different types of vampires, you know, given the Pokemon treatment, you know, got to catch them all. But like, if you're going to do that, you got to demonstrate. So it's not just words. Like they talk about, there are southern vampires, there are Uber vampires, there are spider vampires. Show us what they look like so we know the difference between them. Like after that, there's a pretty good action sequence. We got those brothers like, okay, bro, okay, which never come back, by
okay,
the way.
Bro, give me one.
I feel like that was just like a showreel scene for those two actors. Like they never come back. They don't really do anything. It doesn't make much sense. But the fact that they show these different, they were just talking about all these different types of vampires. And they go, oh, all those vampires were just in this house. I'm like, really? I didn't know that because you never showed us which ones are different and which ones not. You said some of them can't be decapitated, but I don't know which ones. I imagine they should have done like a Zombieland or Suicide Squad thing where like they freeze it and they go, this is what is a spider vampire looks like. These are its special abilities. It's how you can tell what a spider vampire is. And then this is what an uber vampire is. And this is what that is. Then that way it'd be kind of exciting because then like when an uber vampire comes to screen, go, oh, that's a scary one. That one we should be worried about. Oh, that one's just a little vampire. We'd have to be worried about the juniors. We'd have to be, you know, then that way it would increase the stakes and as well as help with the world building. So like, I do feel like on the surface, they were trying to do something kind of interesting. But just frustrating that they didn't dive deep into that because that's the stuff you can do that can build a franchise. I remember one time I was giving advice to a friend of mine writing a sci-fi script and I was saying to him, what you need to do is that sci-fi and world building and franchise stuff, it's all about the details. In Star Wars, they don't have swords, they have lightsabers. They don't have guns, they have blasters. They don't have soldiers, they have stormtroopers. Just these little words make them interesting. And this film has the words, but we don't have the visuals. All the vampires just look the same.
Wearing civilian clothing, you know.
Yeah, like, and that's ignoring the whole Morbius fucking face filter vampire effects.
Like, you know that trope when, like, the clumsy book smart guy is, like, listing off all these, like, pertinent information that's crucial to, like, their final confrontation. And then it's like, it's always that the tough guy and the smart guy, they complement each other. Like what one lacks in brain, they make up for in brawn. But then that's where the smart guy comes in with the important information. And so when they have all these exposition dumps, it's not like it's leading up to showdown when the tough guy, Jamie Foxx, starts to appreciate the book smart guy more. And then he starts to utilize the knowledge that he's learned, like that he's gleaned from the smart guy and vice versa. It's like they don't do anything with that tough guy, smart guy dynamic where they have to learn to like complement each other.
All we get,
he just gets kung fu skills at the end.
Yeah. At the very, very end, he has like one line of dialogue where Dave Franco stands up to his boss and that's it. And it's like, hearing what you just said there just makes you think, oh, what a huge missed opportunity that it just built up to something to like a line of dialogue. That could have been a huge, big character moment, an epic scene where, you know, Dave Franco picks up the gun and just mows down a bunch of people. It's like, and he says some shit like, oh, I've always been a killer or something. And Jamie Foxx could have been something where it's like, oh, actually, if we look up the codes here, we can actually do this thing. But nah.
I just feel like, so this movie reminds me of John Carpenter's Vampires, which is a much better vampire movie. Highly recommend. And in that movie, there's a scene where, so the vampire hunter is kind of paired up with this priest who works with the church. And the priest is the book, kind of the book smart guy who reads all the books about vampires, does all the research. And there's a scene when they're in a truck together and the vampire hunter is pretty much saying to him, forget all the shit you've read about, all the movies and shit. Forget everything. You want to kill a vampire, you drive a stake through its heart. Garlic doesn't work. You know, crosses don't work. Like, he's talking to the priest as if the priest is the audience. So we get a vibe. We get a sense of what the rules are in this world for dealing with these vampires. And it's also establishing that this priest hasn't been in the field, doesn't know the real like world of vampires. He's just read about them from behind the scenes, from a desk. And that movie does the exact same thing that this movie does, but so much more clearer, because the priest has to kind of learn to be in the field and learn to be strong and actually take on the vampires. And it's so much better in that movie. It's so much clearer, so much simpler. And I just love that movie because it goes for the same tone as this film of like that B-grade horror. But
does it though? I feel like this movie has those moments of B-grade horror, but I feel like it's trying so much harder to be a comedy. But no, it's failing. It's failing to achieve that though.
Like John Carpenter's Vampires is B-grade horror, but also really funny. This movie, I don't feel blends well.
Yeah, no, I agree.
In that film, like the vampire, like when they show the ultimate vampire, the villain of the movie, like he fucking destroys a whole bunch of people.
Hmm.
They don't have to tell us he's fucking badass. They just show him destroying all these pro vampire hunters really easily. This movie just has, you know, whoever this, I forgot this chick's name, but the generic movie villain just being like, I can move really fast. I'm not going to move really fast when it matters, but I can move really fast.
Yeah. I'll tell you the biggest missed opportunity of this film, though.
What?
What's the name of the film?
Day Shift.
Day Shift.
When does the fact that it's a day shift come into play?
I was going to bring that up. There's not even like a montage compilation of, you know, like Jamie Foxx and Dave Franco going around like doing a day shift. We see maybe just the first instance when they go to the bowling alley, but then they supposedly go on to more shifts afterwards leading up to Monday. But there's not like a compilation that shows them slowly getting more friendly with each other, you know, sort of like when they first, you know, give each other the cold shoulder. Like none of that. It's like there's no, it doesn't do the title any justice, and the main action at the very end happens at night.
Yeah, it's like, and like they, it's the first, that's when it came to me, because they're like, oh, we're gonna do the night shift, or welcome to the night shift. I'm like, oh, okay, does that mean they're gonna be stronger? It's like, no, because they're underground. Like in every other fight scene, they're in a house. The fact that it's during the day never matters, and it just makes me think, it sounds like when they were pitching this film, it must have sounded great. Because, like, what do vampires hunters do during the day? How do you hunt vampires during the day? I don't know. That sounds really interesting. Show us that. No, we don't really see it. It's just, it just feels like maybe it was cheaper to film during the day and then they could shoot the, or something. Like, it doesn't make any sense why it's all about the day shit. Is it because it's harder to hunt them at day, or no, but they're stronger? No, I don't know. It has no relevance to anything.
I felt like the whole day shift thing was to make it have this bright, fun kind of vibrant
Californian.
Mm. Yeah, that California bright, fun kind of Deadpool style, like action comedy look about it, without all the darkness and the horror that's associated usually with vampire movies. But I mean, like,
but then wouldn't it be such a better movie if the plot was, vampires have brought out a brand new type of sunscreen. So now vampires can walk around in the day.
That'd be more interesting.
It would relate to the title. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, such a massive opportunity.
Yeah,
as well,
and it'd be more original.
Yeah. Like, there were subverting expectations. Yeah, we usually see vampires as, you know, as dangerous in the nighttime, but now they're coming to the daytime. It's like, whoa, now it's like a whole new layer of threat. But with the new sunscreen thing, which, again, as a subplot, got sidelined and only mentioned twice. Just such a huge missed opportunity. So many missed opportunities.
Jamie Foxx, if you're listening, there's your sequel idea. That's what your movie should have been, but there's your sequel idea.
What if the sequel's called Night Shift and they're just like, oh.
But it happens in the day.
Yeah. Like this movie, every time the... Okay, first of all, I want to say, just because we've been trashing this movie, the action scenes are really good.
Yes.
I think they are really well directed and well shot. Like, I can tell that this director comes from a stunt, I think it's a stunt background or something.
He has experience for sure.
I know he worked in the first John Wick and some other stuff, but so you can tell it's done really well, but they all happen either in dark rooms or it's at night, which kind of kills the point of it being a movie called The Day Shift to me, which is just crazy.
Just missed opportunities and abandoned subplots everywhere. Like Aubrey, that Mexican like real estate chick. It's like that whole like real estate mogul, this like Lex Luthor figure, but then that doesn't really go anywhere because like the vampires, they live in just normal houses anyway, just close a few curtains and they're just doing fine, and now they're just making them cohabitate and
they're like, just chilling.
Yeah, exactly. And then abandoned plot lines, you know.
One of the random things that I loved about this movie is whenever people crashed into shit, they like you could see a dummy flying, and that shit just pops me all the time, like a bike crashing into a truck, and like the camera stays on it and the body is like becoming a dummy and then the dummy just flailing. And I was just pissing myself laughing at that because I never see that. It's just funny. You expect it to like, you know, pull out to a big explosion and it's like, no, there's just a dummy just going flying.
Yeah, I mean, for all the trash talk we have on this, so there are some good things, like you said, like fight choreography, you know, good wide angles, very clear the space and everything. It's not like fast cutting. There's like 10 cuts in 1 second. None of that shaky cam thing. Yeah, the Jamie Foxx's charisma, of course, in anything. I think we only have one chase scene, right? I think there was just the one long one. And yeah, the chase scene that was good, but please can we for modern action not have used those like FPV drone things? You know those ones that like flies really fast? And when you watch that, you can just tell that they had a drone operator, DJI thing. Then when they turn around a tight bend, they like does the Dutch angle.
You just described 70% of Michael Bay's ambulance movie.
Oh,
it's nothing but that shot every 10 seconds. Oh, it's another drone.
I lose the immersion.
I do too. I feel like you're about to see a fucking shot on DJI, like little in the top bottom left corner of the shot. Yeah,
you just know that it was, you know, that the process was that it was a drone operator and that it's a drone and stuff. And then like they also attach GoPros to like the chassis of the car to show like the wheels and stuff. And you can just immediately tell that it's a GoPro because you can with any color grading, you can't avoid that like sharp digital GoPro look. So it pulls you out. It pulls you out
because
you know the camera being used.
You see like all these 4K like footage, and then all of a sudden it's like GoPro. Like even to like a general audience, you can tell something's changed in the look of the film.
Let me ask you this, right? Do you think this criticism is coming from like? Do you think an average audience member like would this break the immersion for them? Do you think?
I honestly think so, yeah, because drones and GoPros are popularized now. It's the normal average like consumers like use them. Even the non-video centric people, they know the term GoPro. So and they can just instinctively tell now that it's a GoPro. They can tell that it's, you know, the wide angle.
But is that a bad thing though? Because like GoPros are sports like action cameras. Let me present this to you guys, okay? What do you think of the chase scene in The Batman?
The chase. Oh,
a lot of people praise that. I actually don't love that scene, but like I respect the fact that they were trying to go for this really realistic vibe and stuff. But like, I feel like there's way too much like GoPro type things on the wheels and stuff.
Obviously attached to the body of the.
But some people freaking love that chase scene.
Good music score. I'll give it that. You know.
But like, I'm just thinking, like, how do you think that compares to something like this? Is it the same? Do you have the same problem?
I know for a fact in The Batman, they still attach like fully rigged, like more a light, like less rigged like camera body, but it still wasn't a GoPro. It was actual like cinema like camera body with like some Russian lens called a Helios 50.
So your problem's not the choice of shot. It's more like the actual camera used.
The camera body. Right, you can just know that it's the digital, that wide angle distorted fisheye look. And no matter how much color grading you do, you can just still tell it's GoPro.
There's no way you're getting a GoPro to shoot at night during The Batman. No way.
Go grainy and stuff. And it's just low light.
I think that's one of the things that benefited The Batman was having it dark. It looked more cinematic. And like those action shots weren't as jarring. Whereas in this, it's like full-blown daytime. You can notice the change. And most of the time when they did those fancy kind of drone shots, it wasn't really adding to the story anyway because the story behind the car chase was so like, meh, oh, the vampires are after him. There was no build up. At least in The Batman, there was a big build up to that chase sequence, even though I'm not that big of a fan of it. But, you know, like you really wanted to see the Batman get Penguin. Like it had a driving kind of narrative behind it.
I feel like it's cheap.
You could have taken that car chase sequence out of Day Shift and lost nothing.
I got to be honest with you guys. I don't remember the car chase in this film. I remember the drone shot, but like I don't even remember what part of the film it happened. And I watched it yesterday. I watched it yesterday. I'm struggling. Like I'm trying to remember. I feel like I remember the movie very well, except for that scene. Like it's, I don't know what it is. That's on me. That's not on this film. I'll be out there and say that's on me. Yeah.
I don't know if this happened to you guys, but when I watched the car chase, one movie popped into my mind because of a similar like a location, which is like Terminator 2, when they're driving through like the sewage canal. That movie, that scene popped into my mind. And I'm just thinking like they were able to achieve
Okay.
They were able to achieve so much like in those days, but not have to utilize FPV drones and GoPros and stuff. And I mean, the fact that there was real stunts really helped, but I'm just thinking it's like, you know, just on tripods and, you know, like a camera inside a car, no need for like under, like a camera under the bonnet or have to whiz through the air and do tight turns and stuff. They were still able to do
as well in the Terminator 2 chase sequence. It's like you have this big truck chasing a kid on a dirt bike. It's like, it's already scary because it's like, you know, if this truck, and at some point in the sequence, the truck is like right behind him and you're like, holy shit. Yeah. Like they don't need drones and shit. They just needed these good shots to show this truck is really close to this bike.
So I feel like you two are actually talking about different things here. I feel like okay, so when we talk about Terminator, what's great about that isn't the way it's shot. It's the way it's written. I mean, the way it's shot is obviously great.
Right, yeah, the build-up.
But the script is like what makes it dramatic.
What's at stake?
Yeah, like truck versus little dirt bike. That's dramatic alone. With the use of like GoPros and all that, like obviously, I think in my opinion, the reason that's a thing is it's modern directors trying to be modern to relate to modern audiences. So they're used to seeing GoPros. They're used to seeing drones. And that's what they associate with like action photography. So I feel like their thinking is, I don't mean it to be so defensive of it because obviously I don't give a shit.
You forgot about
it. But I think it's, I'd imagine like if I've never done like a chase scene like that, if I had to, I would be thinking like, okay, people associate this stuff with high impact intensity stuff. So I can understand why they would choose that. But like when I see a drone shot, it sticks out like dog's balls to me. So I'm totally with you as well. But yeah, I find that interesting. The worst thing about that this is how I remembered it. I remember the way it ended, which is why I fucking hate, is the most anticlimactic way I've ever seen a car chase end, where, oh, the roof is too low. He gets out of his car, he shoots his tires and drives under it. And that's how he's able to get away.
Let me slowly stare at the incoming threat. Let me just like one.
Yeah.
Two. Right. Three. Four. Where's the sense of urgency?
I thought
the other truck, when it got to the opening, it was, and it stopped. I was like, wouldn't it be funny if it just exploded for no reason?
Yeah, that is without a doubt the most anticlimactic way I've ever seen a car chase end. Like, either get away, that'd be exciting, have an explosion, have a car crash. No, he slowly gets out of his car, pops his tires so he can fit under it. I was like, oh, is the other car going to do that? No. Is he going to like try and go and like just half the roof gets cut off? No. And I was actually flabbergasted at just how lame of an ending that of to such an exciting, or well, not exciting, but you know, high energy scene that was. And maybe one of the worst things about the film, if I honestly.
Yeah, I just feel like I did not care about that chase. Like you could have established, like, what did we get out of the car chase? We got that the vampires are after him and the head vampire like is after his family. But then she captures them. Like, not long. He gets to the house and she's there waiting for him anyway. So I'm like, what did we really achieve? In Terminator 2, to bring up, like, Martin brought up Terminator 2, that chase sequence is so key to that movie because that is the pivotal moment that the Terminator is showing his alliance to John Connor, where he saves John from literally almost being about run over by the truck. So we establish that, like, he is 100%. Saving John Connor. He's protecting him. You need that scene for the movie, but you don't need the car chase in fucking Day Shift.
In Day Shift's defense, Terminator 2 is one of the best action films ever made. Yeah. So it's kind of hard to compare any movie to Terminator 2.
That's what Martin brought up.
But Terminator 2 is, that car chase is so fucking good, man. Every film wanting to do a car chase should look at that film first. 100%.
Meanwhile, in Day Shift, whenever the daughter turns left on the iPad, oh, guess what? Jamie Foxx turns left. Whenever the iPad goes up a ramp, oh, guess what? They go up a ramp in real life. So how can like the kid just like not be totally unaware of what's going on? Oh, you know, you remember headphones? Put that on. Nothing in the outside world is happening.
She was
way too cool afterwards. Oh, we're getting shot at. Oh, cool, daddy.
Yeah, like
I think it was meant to be funny, but like I didn't find it funny.
Well, like a 10-year-old kid just gets grabbed by her dad and has to leave this birthday party abruptly. Like, as a kid, wouldn't you be like, Daddy, what? I want to stay for the birthday cake. What the fuck?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, she just says to the birthday girl, okay, bye.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but like, isn't that a part where she takes off the headphones? Like, she acknowledges that she was aware of the car chase happening.
You look like you need help, Daddy.
Yeah, yeah, or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, so she is aware, but it's like that doesn't factor into the story at all. Like, which reminds me as well. Look, you read this out before on IMDb. The title is so misleading. They act like, look, it goes, blue collar dad just wants to provide a good life. His quick witted, which by the way, what's so quick witted about it? 10-year-old daughter. His mundane San Francisco, blah, 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 cleaning job. They make like the daughter is like the main character. Like, they don't even mention Dave Franco's character in the freaking thing. Now, maybe this is a bad user submitted thing, but it's like when you look at that and then you watch this movie, that's not the same fucking movie.
That's like not the same movie. Central to like the conflict, the inner conflict of how he balances his work life, his facade with his like breaking relationship and stuff. But yeah, it's just played up for laughs and stuff. That could have been a crucial key moment for when he reveals, oh, I'm not actually cleaning like a pool cleaning person. I'm actually XYZ. That could have been a crucial turning point.
The wife was so chill about it. She's like, so you mean to tell me? You have been not cleaning pools. You've been killing vampires this whole time. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, why'd you have to lie to us like that?
It's like, bitch, you just made up vampires exist. You should be more alarmed. Like, no one seems to be worried that vampires are a thing. They're just like, why are you a liar? It's like, excuse me, dial it back. You just found out vampires exist. You should be at least a little bit concerned.
Yeah,
going back to like how this movie doesn't commit to its own lore, it's like there is this one throwaway line that Dave Franco has where it's like, oh, I'm just contemplating all these vampires used to be people as well. So it's like they try to start introducing some ideas that maybe there's the world's not so black and white. Maybe it's not all just vampires equals I kill them and take their fangs and so on. Like, especially at the end when Dave Franco and that neighbor from Unit 19, they team up, which I don't know why. Like, they just like they don't like delve any more into how there are, you know, vampires that allies with you, those that do not want bloodlust, and those that are part of like a big like mogul or something. You know, it just doesn't commit to itself.
Well, the vampire hunter, his partner has now become a vampire, and there's another woman that he knows is a vampire, and he goes from being like, I'm the lone wolf, to just, I'm gonna team up with two people that are vampires to take down the ultimate vampire. Why? Why is he going to do that? Wouldn't he just kill them?
Also, don't they need to eat humans to survive?
Yeah, so why haven't they eaten him?
There's a scene earlier on where he's like, you got to think of them not as people. They're worthless. They're dollar signs. If Dave Franco's not a person anymore, neither is his neighbor, shouldn't he be killing them and taking their fangs for money to pay for his daughter's tuition?
That would have been an interesting scene if he was like about to kill Dave Franco, and Dave was like, what are you doing, man? And he's like, I need your teeth. I need that fucking money, man.
Or if he's like, you're not a human, and then Dave Franco had to prove his humanity or something.
Yes. Like, such waste of opportunity where like the main protagonist like has his like personal philosophies get challenged now that, you know, his personal peers are now in the group that he used to hunt and kill and stuff. There's no like inner conflict or any of that, you know, none of that. Everything is surface level.
That's why John Carpenter's Vampires is so good, because the start of the movie, you see the vampire hunter is like, I work alone, but I fucking do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
Like, all my teammates are dead. I'm going to go dismember them and bury their bodies. Like, you see, like, he does not give a fuck, does whatever it takes. And by the end of the movie, he has to let his friend who became a vampire go, and he doesn't kill him. But you see him change.
I think it's a decent premise. It's just that it needed to choose very early on in the production, is this going to be an action horror or is it going to be like an action comedy type thing? But it never commits to be a comedy. It never commits to be like a serious dramatic piece. And that's why they're constantly, you know, this scene could have been about lore building or character development, but no, instead they've got to put jokes here because they have to make it a joke. And because they're so unevenly split, and it's like what you were saying before about how the tones don't match, it's like it's changing genre every scene. It's going back and forth between two genres rather than a merge. Like, to go back to Taika Waititi, like, yeah, his Thor movies may be 100% comedy, but at least it's still a superhero film, you know? They don't stop to do a sketch comedy about, you know, some people at the coffee house or whatever, you know?
That's for Thor 5.
Yeah.
Speaking of Taika, it's like Taika, it brings up, yeah, it's just like brings up, he did what we Do in the Shadows. At least that film, tonally, it commits to being a mockumentary. So it keeps that up rather than just like, yeah, because that's why in pre-production, you got to decide sort of like early-ish on. It's like, okay, once you have like a certain genre, you got to commit to it, you know?
Yeah. And look, you look at a film of his like Jojo Rabbit, right? That movie at one point stops trying to be funny to do serious stuff. But you still, like, the world that he's built has allowed for that. You know, he's done a good job of building, like, Jojo Rabbit's a fucking great movie. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it's fucking great. But it's like, I think it's his best movie. Anyways, like, they'll have like these emotional scenes and stuff, but then they can go back to comedy because he set it all that up. But in this movie where they kind of just start Frankensteining scenes together, none of it feels organic. Just unfortunately.
It doesn't commit to itself.
I got to be honest. I am really shocked neither of yous have brought up how shit the villain of this movie is.
Yeah.
Just a Lex Luthor figure, something about real estate, but then that's like an abandoned, you know, subplot. And it's just, yeah.
I'm trying to think of a way to describe how I feel about the villain. Because obviously she's very forgettable, but I don't necessarily blame the actress for it. Like she's written so generically. It's just constantly 90% of her scenes is her someone picking someone up by a throat, holding up in the air, and making threats. And it's like, wow, this is the most generic bad guy thing I've ever seen.
I just, as soon as she talks, her voice is so monotone and so boring. She sucks the life out of me, ironically, kind of like a vampire sucking the blood out of its victims. But I was like, it just, the movie comes to a screeching halt. It just, everything stops. And then this isn't like in Morbius when,
comparing to Morbius, like as if that's something thought provoking.
I forgot that.
Matt Smith.
Yeah. Matt Smith in Morbius, though, even though that villain is written terribly, super generic, you could tell he is elevating it by like having fun with it.
Might as well own it.
Yeah, whereas I feel like this actress isn't owning it, so everything's just kind of got this flat, like, I know this is shit, so I'm phoning it in.
I don't know if it's just phoning it in. I think she's just miscast.
Could be that. Because, I don't know this actress.
See, so I don't know her either, but like, when I look at it, I don't want to bring like gender into it. I don't want to be like that guy, but it's not even a gender thing. That's not the type of character you get to play the big bad, you know?
The Lex Luthor figure.
You need someone that's physically intimidating. And if you're not getting someone physically intimidating, they have to try and play the opposite. So if she was acting super maybe bubbly and cutesy and feminine and then just out of nowhere just cut someone's throat, that would be intimidating because you wouldn't expect the juxtaposition of portrayals. But she's got this, you know, we keep saying Lex Luthor sort of vibe, which I get it because of the suit and everything. And I do think that's actually an interesting idea of a female Lex Luthor. But I think they do establish that she has a power that others don't have, but that doesn't come through with the performance. And I just can't think it comes down to just, you know, if we had like a really muscular woman or if we had a real, I don't know, she just looks like a mom the whole time.
You don't believe it, you know? It's not believable. It's not like Vincent D'Onofrio as the Kingpin. You really do believe that he is this overarching, like he's the man above. He is the one above the whole operation.
Physically intimidating,
you
know? Right? And if he was there against like some like little kid, he'd be like, oh, fuck, that kid's fucked. But when she's there up against Jamie Foxx, it's like, Jamie Foxx would whoop her ass. You know, that's not threatening to me.
You don't believe that it's like this is the babe honcho who's got, you know, the lieutenants under her or him. It's like, you don't believe it.
They also establish her like power that makes her different to all the other vampires is that she's meant to be super fast. But what's the point of a villain that's super fast if they barely ever use his power?
Yeah.
Like, until the very end.
Yeah. But even when she fights Jamie Foxx, she's super fast to like do the usual bullshit. Oh, I'm going to be flashy and kick him across the room. But then I go back to my stupid villain generic fucking monologue for 2 hours and then give the hero the time to kill me.
Yeah.
It's like, you're an idiot. Like this, if a villain is super fast, they will kill the hero. They won't dick around. They won't monologue. They will just kill them. And she had so many opportunities to kill him. It just, yeah, this villain is just not believable.
I think it's part of a larger problem. I think every female character in this film is severely underwritten. Like I don't think there's a single female character in this film with a defining personality trait who does anything other than to deliver like what feels like placeholder dialogue. There's just very little effort put into there's very little effort put into most characters in this film. I think Jamie yes. Foxx and Dave Franco.
Yeah, I was going to say the male,
regardless of gender.
Yeah. Yeah, but I feel like in particular, it's just because they're all the females in this film are very supporting characters. It's a very male dominated film. Which I'm not saying is a bad thing. It just feels like they just had a quota of we can't have it all men. So just shove in the women there. Don't give them much. Don't put much. Like the writers didn't put much effort into thinking about them. I'm just going to go out on a limb and assume this is written by a dude. Like, correct me if I'm wrong. But like it's just someone who, yeah, just did not think about it too much. And I think that's probably going to come from someone who's not prioritizing that. And that's just lazy writing at the end of the day.
Yeah, you made me think that immediately the exact character that fits that description is that neighbor from Unit 19. Mm. We see her maybe like just on once. Two occasions.
Yeah.
Or like before the big final showdown. And then like when they, before they go on to like that big underground Aztec temple, which looked cheap as fuck. Like they said that, oh, she made, like Audrey made me do it because she wanted me to get close to you, whatever, as your neighbor. But it made me think that either they had some deleted scenes where they shared screen time more together, where they get along, got, you know, neighborly and all that, or they just failed to write any scenes leading up to really. That scene, that line made no sense. They said, yeah, when she said that, oh, well, she made me get closer to you and stuff.
You're right.
We saw nothing of that.
She was very shoehorned in. Yeah. You're right. She owns a couple scenes that they'll probably shoved in last minute. And the sad thing is she's the most interesting female character in the film. And they, again, it's a rush job. And look, to be fair, a lot of stuff in this film's like a rush job. But yeah, just going back to the villain, it's a very weak villain. And that's the thing. The hero is often defined by their villain.
Oh, for sure. Because you see the, you know, ideological parallels and how they have similar motivations and stuff, but you disagree with their methods and so on. You know, none of that thought-provoking thing.
Most of the worst action films you can think of probably have the most forgettable villains too.
Yeah, 100%. And I hate villains that constantly tell you what their plan is.
The like, James Bond effect.
The James Bond effect. Yes, 100%. I'm going to bite your daughter and turn her into a vampire, and then she's gonna
drink you. She says drink you like three times. It's cringy.
And she's gonna go for your wife, and they're gonna kill each other, and you're gonna watch. And she says it like three times, and I'm just like, can you just do it?
Yeah.
I don't need to hear you. Like,
that
you don't,
was so stupid.
You don't need to tell him the plan. You can just do it. Like, just go up, just show her, like, approaching the daughter with the fangs. And then have him be like, no, what are you doing? Like, we get what you're doing. We get it. We don't need you to say it.
Imagine if you're in Penrith one day, Penrith train station, catching a train, and some SJ comes up to you. He's like, hey, lad, I'm going to shank you. Then I'm going to steal your phone. Then I'm going to steal your car. No, by then you've run off.
Where are you going?
Have already arrested
Where are you going, mate?
All right, come here. I've finished telling you my plan here. I'm going to take this knife out of my pocket. No, don't get in your car, driver. Mate, then I'm going to roll. I'm going to call my boy. Oh, fuck, he's gone.
You're already in, like, Blacktown by then and even beyond.
But yeah, that's very true. It's like there's none of the whole like, oh, now you understand how I felt when you killed my daughter. That old grandma was her daughter?
Again, I think that's meant to be a joke, but it's not funny. It's not executed like a joke. But again, probably too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yes.
Some comedic screenwriter probably wrote it. Some dramatic screenwriter came in who then didn't realize that was a joke and then just made it boring. And then I think that happened 100 times in this film, probably.
That's so weird because Jamie Foxx has got a comedy background. Can't he punch up the script a bit?
It's not his job. He's not getting paid for that. So he wouldn't do it. Plus, he's playing the straight man character. So his job is to not be funny. Sure, he has some jokes, but his character's function isn't to be the funny one. That's Dave Franco, which again is why it's fucking crazy he has such little screen time in this movie.
Yeah. Another part of this whole equation is the existence of the union when he has to force partner him up with Jamie Foxx and stuff. I never knew that this movie was supposed to be the tough veteran that has to begrudgingly partner up with a rookie and stuff. And then it's another thing, when they're ratting off all those different codes and rules and stipulations and all these 20 years of red tapes at each other and stuff. It's supposed to be shown that Dave Franco's character has toughened up and stuff. But it's how does the union get anything done with all these different rules of engagement? If the vampire bats one eyelid, no, that's a no-go. You cannot open fire. And then there's two vampires right there. Dave Franco, who's recently decapitated, and then the neighbor. And then they just let them go off scot-free, you know? So, and how is it that they let, people Jamie Foxx go freelancing on the black market? You'd think they'd, clamp down on illicit sort of operations, because then we don't want our identity revealed to the public. We cannot let the public know of our existence like Men in Black and stuff. So it's just
that's what this movie should have been. Weird. Men in Black. They should have Men in Black this
A secret society that of vampire hunters, and it's another secretive group of vampires that exist with us in society. And then it's
so just make this Men in Black 1.
Yeah,
but or vampires. RPD,
which is also Men in Black 1, but except instead of aliens they use fucking monsters or some shit.
Definitely.
This one.
Yeah.
Who gives a fuck? Not
yeah. Nothing that's Oscar worthy sort of thing.
You're right though. The blueprint existed and they ignored the blueprint. If they stuck to the blueprint that Men in Black created, they could have churned this out with their eyes closed. Instead, this movie has multiple inciting incidents. They don't meet Dave Franco till later. The film should have pretty much opened. It should have been action set piece. Then, you can't be trusted. I'm throwing the book at you. Here's Dave Franco. That could have been scene two. But instead, we got all this other bullshit. And then when he gets turned to a vampire, that could have also been the start of the movie to create a much easier movie. Vampire has to team up with Vampire Hunter. Boom. There's your $1 billion box office movie. There you go. Probably not $1 billion.
They threw in too much into the mix. Yeah. For sure.
Movies that I'd recommend you to watch instead of Day Shift, Blade 1 and 2, skip Trinity at all costs. John Carpenter's Vampires, great film. The original Fright Night. 80s classic. Even What We Do in the Shadows is a pretty good vampire movie. Even though it's a mockumentary, it nails the comedy. It's definitely a better vampire movie than Day Shift.
Still, it's not the worst vampire movie we had this year.
Oh, yeah, but fuck.
I'd say Morbius is still worse.
How glad must they be that this came out the same year as Morbius?
Yeah.
People must have been like, I'll just take anything that's better than that shit.
Yeah.
I like how they try to break the fourth wall by listing off other vampire movies. Oh, what? You didn't watch Breaking Dawn Part 2?
He watched Twilight but missed the last Twilight movie. Yeah. So he's like, Anna had a baby. Shit.
That's a good joke.
Yeah, but it's when you list off, other, movies in the vampire genre, it doesn't absolve this movie of its crappiness,
To end on a kind of positive-ish note, I won't say too positive, but the reason we're able to shit on this film so much is because of the genre. The genre... the fantasy sort of genres open yourself and world building stuff that opens you up to be able to nitpick and pull apart. Right. If this is just a straight up comedy, we just caught shit and see you later. But this movie had some okay chuckles. I've seen worse comedy. It's not Holmes and Watson. There are worse comedies out there. There are worse action movies out there. It's just I'm getting really over of these generic, like, as an aspiring screenwriter, director myself, when I see something this average and feels hastily put together, bro, it makes me mad. It makes me mad, dude. I get pissed off. So, but I just want to be out there and say, it's not terrible. Jamie Foxx, if you're out there, I would love to work with you. Dave Franco, if you're out there, loved you in Scrubs. I'll watch you again. I'd love to work with you too, buddy. Yeah, everyone forgets he was in Scrubs, but that's how I met.
At the tail end, wasn't he?
Yeah. That's most people stopped watching by then, but I stuck around. I like my Scrubs. I stuck around.
I feel like this is why we often see, like, well, I don't know often, but it's like some actors that say they like to, after this big budget movie, they want to go back to the smaller indie stuff, because like there's actually passion driven, but then with big productions, it's you know, you've got corporate, you got execs, you know, lots of decisions that trickle down from on top with conflicting financial interests as well. So you're subject to the whims and the flows of like what the bigger higher ups, the ones with the actual money, thinks the markets want. So it's like the actors are just like, I just want to go back to, you know, the smaller, you know, like passion driven, you just know, small crew.
Break the shackles off creatively.
Maybe this film was a metaphor for Hollywood with all the red tape and the cooks in the kitchen.
That was nope.
Sorry. Sorry, Jordan Peele.
We only get one film a year that criticizes Hollywood openly through symbolism and metaphors. So Day Shift is a movie I don't think is worth seeing. I think it's not worth seeing because it's quite generic, quite forgettable. And as I mentioned, there's way more better vampire movies. Having said that, it's definitely better than Morbius. So yeah, guys, if you were to give me like one kind of closing statement about why Day Shift is not worth seeing, what would you say?
Day Shift is a movie that mostly has the most bombastic stuff happen at night. It is a movie that is worth putting on the telly if it's on mute and you just leave it running in the background. I've been giving this movie maybe a 2 out of 5, but that's being generous, because it does have some redeeming qualities. It has, you know, quick as actions, and Jamie Foxx is charismatic as ever, and, you know, good car chase, but then everything else is just abandoned subplots and just like doesn't commit to its own lores and its own rules, and it's just tropes and tropes.
Matt, final words.
This movie's got a bit of an identity crisis, but, you know, the action scenes are worth looking up on YouTube. I think the action scenes were done pretty well. Just unfortunately, it's a comedy movie that's not trying to be a comedy movie at times. But hey, I think some younger audiences out there might enjoy it. Yeah, it's not for me, but, you know, swing and a miss. But maybe next time, guys. I am going to keep my eye out for this director, because I think if he took on a proper action film, he could, you know, he could be doing the next, you know, Atomic Blonde or Nobody, or, you know, one of these other John Wick inspired films. Just this one wasn't it for me.
Just don't cast Snoop Dogg in it next time for your next directorial, you know.
Oh yeah, from now on, I'm so over Snoop Dogg.
Get Cardi B instead.
Just have a twerk on camera endlessly.
Yeah. Well, that's me, guys. I'm giving, what's this movie called again? Day Shift.
Not Night Shift. That's
not
for
Night
sure.
Shift.
For some reason.
Not Night Shift is getting a 2.5 out of 5 for me. And yeah, that's the show. So
what would you rate it out of 5?
Yes.
I'm a little bit nicer. I might go 3.
Three out of five.
3 out of 5.
What elevates it beyond the 2? Like, what are its redeeming qualities? I think you mentioned like the
fight. Action scenes. I think Dave Franco, whenever he's in a comedic moment, is good. Look, it's lazily written, but it's not lazily shot. Also, it's just not offensively bad. I've seen a lot of movies that are pretty bad this year.
That's true.
I've seen, if I was watching the theater, I wouldn't walk out. It is enough to at least make me not bored to death. And I know that's a very low bar. But
to have your audience walk out in the first place.
Yeah, but yeah, it's a 3 out of 5 for me.
That's like what people said at the end of 2020. They're like, I lived.
Yeah.
I made it to the end.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, that's me. I'm Michael Piccinieri, and this has been Martin Jung and Matt Feller. Just a reminder, guys, you could check out Matt's short film, She's Not Your Type, at Velomat Films. Is that correct? Yep. Yes, on YouTube.
Link in description, hopefully. Yep.
Which would you recommend? Which would you recommend people watch? Day Shift or She's Not Your Type?
Well, I'm very biased, and I do feel bad trashing a film with much bigger budget and talent attached than mine. But if you want to support an indie film out there, check out She's Not Your Type. Subscribe to Velomat Films, and hopefully the next Jamie Foxx film is a banger.
Yeah, hopefully you can get Jamie Foxx on She's Not Your Type too.
If it happens, I'll let you know. You'll be the first
That'd
to call.
Be good.
Like, dude, you won't believe what just happened.
Jamie Foxx saw me shit on his movie, and he wants me to direct his next film.
This Day Shift is a cautionary tale. Don't sell your movies to Netflix, otherwise all these corporate executives will just have too much.
I want that Netflix money, man. Don't ruin this for me. I need that Netflix money.
All right, guys. Yes.
All right, catch ya.
Laters.
Thank you for listening to Movies Worth Seeing. Make sure to like and share the show and leave a review. You can follow us on Instagram at Michael Pish Podcasting and watch movie reviews, audience reaction videos, and other fun content on our YouTube channel at Michael Pishinary.